This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1 with myself, Raymond Grenfell, Kelly Warden, and Joni Boyd, and also Brahma, keeping up the positive vibes. Very important. How's it going, folks?
It's going good.
Yes?
Yeah, hot.
Hot? hot Monday?
Yeah. Loving it.
Before we go any further, though, huge thank you to Jeff for another excellent edition of On The Record. He'll be
Fantastic,
back next Monday.
As always.
Yeah, he's such the man of the chops and the great voice. Probably one of the best voices
the
on radio.
Voice.
We were just complimenting your voice, Jeff.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Hey, how's it
Welcome
going?
It's
not the heat that's melting all the butter in perfect this morning. It's,
that was smooth.
Yeah, almost as smooth as Jeff's voice. Anyway, the Indie Media Show. Covering all the news from the interwebs. On today's program, we're going to be talking to local musician Nick Albrook. Of course, you know Nick from bands such as Pond and a whole bunch of things that he's been doing over the years. A group of artists have started to raise awareness around fossil fuel companies' sponsorship of the arts. It's become rather sort of pertinent of late, with Woodside sponsoring a performance by Wayo and the West Australian Symphony Orchestra for the Perth Festival, the Beyond Ocean performance. So we're going to be chatting to Nick a little bit about the role fossil fuel companies play, and that a lot of artists are not comfortable with the amount of sponsorship that these companies give to the arts, and the position that puts artists in, having to perform and essentially in a way validate and justify the activities of some of these rather destructive companies. So we'll be chatting to him a little later in the show.
And I have some voices from a protest last Saturday. LGBTI activists and our allies gathered in the Perth Cultural Centre to protest the religious discrimination bill that, was shelved but definitely not scrapped, and will, if the Liberals get in next election, it'll almost certainly go through. Yeah, we were having a go at how they've used trans kids as a political football, and how they're essentially throwing all, minorities and marginalised groups under the bus. So I've got some speeches from there. Should be good.
Now, at this year's upcoming Perth Festival on Saturday, March 5th, there is a show called Become Ocean, by West Australian Youth Orchestra and the West Australian Symphony Orchestra, that is sponsored by Woodside. It's a little bit ironic, given that the performance is about preserving the ocean, and meanwhile, Woodside are about to build a 400-kilometre pipeline from the Scarborough gasfield off the coast of the Pilbara to the Burrup through pristine marine ecosystems. The Scarborough Gas Project will emit more than 1 billion tonnes of CO2, the largest new fossil fuel project in Australia. It also more immediately threatens some of the oldest, largest, most unique Aboriginal rock art in the world. But this situation, where fossil fuel companies are sponsoring the arts, is nothing new, unfortunately. We've reported on this show, and you would have seen that the connections between the Fringe Festival and fossil fuel companies was challenged over the last few years by artists. And again, artists are challenging fossil fuel sponsorship of the arts, particularly around this performance at the Perth Festival. To discuss it in more depth, I had the opportunity to speak to Nick Albrook from Pond about the fossil fuel company's sponsoring of the arts. And I started just by asking Nick if this was an issue that he believed more and more people, especially artists, were becoming aware of.
I hope so. I mean, yeah, it's kind of difficult because there's so there seems to be so little willingness to sponsor the or to invest in the arts from from other areas, from government or, you know, and stuff like that. So, it feels really gross to be reliant on something that, you know, I and a lot of other artists so sort of vehemently disagree with. And, and especially with the, you know, like, especially with people who don't, like, you know, maybe the youth orchestra and stuff like that, people who are just sort of being, being co-opted to advertise or, you know, be used as a platform for this, you know, these fossil fuel companies to make them to kind of, you know, launder their product and whatnot.
I mean, the event you're talking about is specifically at this year's Perth Festival. It's coming up on the Saturday, 5th of March. It's a show called Become Ocean by WAIO, the West Australian Youth Orchestra. Now, that's being in part sponsored by Woodside. It seems sort of strangely ironic that's a show about the beauty of the ocean and it comes from a kind of environmental perspective. And meanwhile, yeah. Woodside are about to build this 400-kilometre pipeline from the Scarborough gas field off the coast of Pilbara to through the Burrup, through pristine marine ecosystems, threatening, you know, some of the most sort of sacred rock art in the world. It just sort of, it seems like we've slipped into some sort of absurd reality that a company that is responsible for that is then funding, you know, funding a show that's meant to be about the preserving the ocean. It's quite strange, really, isn't it?
It's like mind-meltingly weird and hypocritical, yeah. And like the guy, you know, I mean, I'm like John Luther Adams, the composer of Become Ocean. He's kind of, I mean, like I'm not a classical music head, but he is one of the few like composers that I could actually name check as someone that whose work I really enjoy, and he very specifically created that piece as a sort of a protest and something to raise awareness about the destruction of our oceans, and so the hypocrisy is incredible.
There is this growing, I guess, awareness and campaign. There's the Fossil Free Arts campaign group that's set up. But it seems like, I guess, it's a bit of a risk for a lot of artists. I mean, imagine yourself even, you know, speaking out about this, there's a, you know, that part of you that thinks, oh, you know, is this going to impact me? And, you know, considering how difficult things have been for artists these last few years with the pandemic and, you know, the restrictions really limiting, you know, where you can play and how you can play, It's unfortunate, but, you know, I think for a lot of artists, even I imagine those in WAIO or in WAZO who are performing at this show, while they may not necessarily agree with fossil fuel companies sponsoring shows or even sponsoring entire programs, there's that risk. And it's, I guess, the, you know, because their employment is so precarious and so, you know, and our entire economy is so intertwined with the fossil fuel industries. Do you have friends and others that you think, you know, are reluctant to speak out because they're just worried that they won't get a gig or they won't get funding for a tour or for some sort of project?
Yeah, I'm sure I do. And that's also, I'm really glad you said that, because it does make it kind of thorny and precarious. Like not just this issue, but so many sort of ethical issues that are around, like the financial side of the music industry is really difficult, because it's so hard to get any money, you know, with this Spotify thing going on, it's really tough for young and poor musicians to feel comfortable to take any kind of stand when your funding's so, you know, so precarious. Yeah, absolutely. It's difficult.
Totally. And I guess we saw that, I mean, you know, on a totally different issue, we saw that with issues around the Sydney Festival and artists being, you know, asked to withdraw over, I mean, you know, a very separate and different issue, but over the Israeli funding of a program there. And, you know, it seems to be this ongoing issue. And I guess it comes back to, you know, as you're saying there, the nature of arts and how they're funded and the sort of the economic reality of the arts and music industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, out of this, just looking, I guess, specifically at the Perth Festival and where they receive their funding, or looking at, you know, fossil fuel funding in general, do you see an alternative? Is it up to government to actually come in, step in and properly fund the arts, or is it up to artists to find other streams of income, or, you know, for punters to you know, offer more support so that we're not so dependent on companies such as Woodside?
Well, man, that's the thing. Like, it shouldn't be our responsibility. Like, it should be up to the people who are in charge to actually make these decisions. But I guess as long as they don't take any responsibility, then it kind of de facto falls in the lap of punters and artists who end up having to take a hit. And, like, I don't mean just a financial hit, but also, like, a creative and, I don't know, dare I say, spiritual hit for, like, musicians just want to play tunes, you know, just want to do this thing that they've, you know, and I'm talking, like, definitely about, like, the orchestras, the Wasso and Wayo, who, like, the amount of training and practice that classical musicians have to go through is just, like, so far beyond me as the hack playing, like, dancing around the front of a rock band. Like, so, you know, to actually, it really sucks that it falls on their shoulders or on punters who just want to go out and have their mind blown by two orchestras playing this, like, Titanic glacial piece, which would be so sick. But, like, I guess as long as there's no alternative funding coming, then it does come from there. But, like, they, you know, other like, you know, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival has divested funding from. What was it? Is it BP? I think. And, like, the Uniting Church of Australia is, you know, divested from fossil fuel funding. So there's obviously ways to do it, but, like, I'm not on the board. I'm not financially savvy. I can barely do my tax return. So, you know, it's like, yeah, it should be up to someone else.
That was Nick Albrook speaking to us earlier today about Woodside's funding of the Become Ocean performance at the Perth Festival, and more broadly about fossil fuel funding of the arts. Now, there is a group, Fossil Free Arts, a local campaign against fossil fuel funding of the arts in WA. They previously were able to kick Woodside off the fringe bill, and they're currently asking for artists to sign an open letter you know, demand that Perth Festival drop Woodside sponsorship. So if you want to find out more information about that, you can just look up Fossil Free Arts. And you're on the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1.
And on Saturday, queer activists and our allies gathered in the Perth Cultural Centre to protest the federal government's religious discrimination bill and the use of trans kids as a political football by both Liberal and Labor parties. Despite the shelving of the bill, activists were very keen to keep up the pressure on the government, as it will most likely come back in some form if the Liberal Party is re-elected. And we also definitely wanted to have a go at Labor for passing the bill and, again, using trans kids as a political football. The first speaker you'll hear from the rally is Green Senate candidate River Clark.
Stand up, Labor! Stand up, Labor! Stand up, Labor! Stand up, Labor! The reality is, whatever the fucking Labour Party tried to say all week with their, like, crying speeches and their appealing to their progressive electorates and trying to say that, you know, they really cared about queer people and they've heard their constituents, which is why they don't agree with this bill in this form, maybe just in this form. We might vote for it anyway. You never know. Like, Yay. They just ummed and ahed and they weaved around all week and they got nothing done. And it was stopped not because of them in the end, whatever they might try and claim. The reality is that Labour and the Liberals used the community for political dodgeball this week. And it's a bloody shame.
Shame!
The bill was absolutely disgusting, and we know that. The Liberal Party introduced a bill that was pretty typical for them. It's Scott Morrison's little pet project. That's what he does. He loves the Australian Christian lobby. They love him. He was trying to make them happy. But considering debating the bill, considering giving them any airtime, what the Labour Party did this week was abandon the queer community and abandon the disabled community and abandon so many marginalised communities across the country, despite so many Australians coming together to say that they didn't want this bill in any form. And it's a shame. Shame on them.
Shame!
We got lucky in the end. Things just kind of fell out right. What actually happened, despite what Labour says about successfully blocking it in the Senate and what the Liberals have said about changing their mind, is that it went to the Senate a bit too late and they all went, you know what, this didn't quite make the cutoff and we're not going to talk about it today, and they've run out of sitting days before the election. That was it. That's terrifying. Like, that's what it came down to. That's the state of our parliament. Labour's amendments to the Statement of Belief clause, which if you don't know, basically meant that if you use Jesus said so as an excuse, you could discriminate against someone. They voted against removing that entirely. They tried to put in an amendment that really wouldn't have fixed it and would have left WA in the absolute dirt, because basically their amendment was that it couldn't override state legislation, but our state legislation is garbage, so we still would have been screwed. Their amendments were useless. In WA, and this is where we need to take this momentum, this is where we need to take this momentum and unite the communities and take all of these people and all of these allies that are now standing with us, because they've realised how screwed it all is for especially for queer kids in religious schools and for queer teachers in religious schools, but for so many people across the community. We need to take this momentum and make things change. We need to get Labour to commit in the federal government. We need Labour to commit to killing this bill. And in WA, and we're a while away from an election here, so we just have to deal with Labour and their comfy little double majority that they don't want to use for positive change. But in WA, we need to put the pressure on them, because our Equal Opportunity Act is hot garbage, and our child protection is hot garbage, and our social housing is hot garbage, and they're not doing enough to fix it. And we need to put the pressure on them. It's really easy for them in WA to make a first step. Because there's this nice piece of legislation, this Project 108. And if you don't know what that is, it would do a whole bunch of great stuff, including introducing an X marker and getting rid of the gender board and just, like, generally making things better. And it's sitting on a shelf somewhere getting dusty because Labour doesn't want to touch it in case they piss off their, like, religious conservative voters that probably are never going to vote for them anyway.
Yay!
So we need Labour to pass Project 108 here. And at a federal level, we need them to kill the bill. And we need them to start listening to their constituents, and we need to start voting for more progressive voices than the Labour Party, because we have given them so many second chances, and it is too late.
Hello. Why was it important for you to come out to this action today?
Well, I run suicide support groups for the trans community. And our group this past week was a really devastating group, which pretty much focused entirely on the distress that we were all feeling about the religious discrimination bill. And it just motivated me into action. Like, I couldn't bear witness to all that distress and pain and just do nothing. So, yeah, I really had to come out today and do something about it.
Discrimination in all its forms should be impermissible. Primum non nocere, firstly no harm. That should be the basic principle, the rudimentary principle, a human rights principle, social justice. We are the human family and we must be diverse. In all families, we are diverse. and loving and spread the love and salt of the earth approaches. The abomination of what's gone before Parliament, the spectacle in that repugnant place called the Senate, that spectacle, that brutal public spectacle that has diminished the Australian landscape, that has diminished the national consciousness, that has diminished public consciousness. That should have been impermissible. That should have been impermissible. We shouldn't be discussing categorical groups. We shouldn't be discussing people's identity. We shouldn't be discussing any of us in racializing classism, all the isms. We shouldn't be disaggregating people's identity and targeting and causing liability. I work in suicidality and suicide prevention, and I know the culmination of what it is to make identity a liability. I've seen death every single day for the last 15 years of my life, and suicidality for the last 15 years of my life. I know what it is to do what they're doing, and the incitement of what they're stirring up, and the craziness of what people are going through, and the clear-mindedness that we are moving away from, and lurching, no manifesting, contriving, division, pitchfork standoffs, and muddled-mindedness, and then stirring within that muddled-mindedness the reprise of hate and incitement, and that there's falsity and false narratives, and we are diminishing people's identity, and we are going to fall.
Yeah. Since marriage equality, we have had so many people who have felt so emboldened by the whole, you know, debate around marriage equality, that life has literally been hell for most of us since then. We're not talking about just this week. We're not talking about just this legislation. We're talking about years and years and years of discrimination by the rich, by the powerful. I don't care if you want to practice your religion, and quite frankly, I'll fight for your right to do so. But likewise, no one gets to tell me how to live my life or to not practice religion. So yeah, thank you very much for joining us here today. We cannot be complacent about this. We really can't. I saw Stephen Jones's speech. And as a parent, you know, as a parent, my heart, he was talking about, you know, his nephew who had sadly passed away. He was talking about how much he loved his son. And then he voted. And then he voted for the bill. And it's, the thing is like, I watched his kid afterwards, you know, and he's so proud of his dad for speaking out in Parliament. And that's great. And, you know, quite possibly, his child has some privilege that will protect him. Probably has a certain privilege being the child of a member of Parliament that will protect them. Our kids don't. Our kids don't. So don't try and pit them against each other. Don't try and say, well, we'll look after the gay ones, but the trans ones we'll throw under the bus. Because our kids aren't having that either. The problem is our kids can't vote. So we have to speak out for them.
Why was it important for you to come out today?
Well, this week, I feel like I've aged a year in a week looking at everything that's going on with this bill. And what people don't realise is that in terms of religious discrimination, this is actually discriminating against more than just queer people. It's discriminating against people who are at different intersections. And I, for myself, I find that it's really important to be out there and to say that this is not okay. It's not okay to discriminate against anyone. And also to point out that, you know, if you are disabled, if you're neurodivergent, if you are a migrant or a refugee, you're likely to be affected by this, you know. So yeah, it was just really important to be out here and to support that this bill should be killed.
Put it in the grave where it belongs, being this vile piece of legislation it is. Scrap its entirety right now. Granting privilege and giving the right to openly discriminate, giving the right to hurt, giving the right to ultimately kill to religious, bigoted, small minority voices. This is what this bill is made of. There is nothing to be debated about. There is absolutely nothing to amend about it, nor is there anything unclear like the opposition leader, Anthony Albanese, has been stating and spreading. Even though Labor's amendments did not protect LGBTQI people in any regard, the Australian Christian Lobby literally withdrawn their support for the bill because they state that it will be unnecessarily interfere with the operation of faith-based schools. How can you not get any clearer than this?
Well, if we ever needed the proof that this bill was anything more than an attempt to discriminate against the LGBTQIA community, especially our trans brothers and sisters, we need look no further than the words of the ACL, who have come out and stated that with the amendments protecting trans students, we might as well abolish the bill altogether because it will cause more harm than good. Shame. This bill, we all know, was never about protecting lives, Christian or otherwise. This was just another attempt by hard-right fundamentalists to gain votes and power in order to influence our very democracy, to blur the lines between church and state. Christians do not need an extra bill protecting their beliefs. Christians are not being discriminated against. Christians are not losing their jobs because of their beliefs. They are not being denied healthcare, housing, education for being Christian, unlike what is happening to our LGBTQIA community. Unlike the kind of very real discrimination that could be enshrined in law if this bill should ever be passed. We already have legislation in place protecting a person's freedom of religion. Religious bodies have their churches tax-free, their private schools funded by public money in which to practice their beliefs. And let's get that straight. Bigotry and discrimination are not Christian beliefs. Nowhere in the commandments or anywhere in the Bible does it say thou must persecute and exclude LGBTQIA people from their community. How dare one tiny group of fundamentalists presume to speak for all people of faith? Yeah. It's not just gay and trans students and teachers who will be affected. Because while our government were haggling over whether to leave trans children out of any protections, they failed to address the fact that it's not just LGBTQI kids who will bear the brunt of religious discrimination. What about our healthcare system? Do you know our government actually subcontracts several health services to religious bodies? Right. Midland Hospital. What about women seeking an abortion? Will they be denied on religious grounds? This bill would wind back years of hard-fought rights for women. And what about single parents, single mothers, who already bear the brunt of patriarchal disapproval? Will they be denied housing on religious grounds? Adoption laws. Will only heterosexual couples be allowed to adopt? This bill should be abolished in its entirety. And shame on Labor for not opposing it from the beginning. Double shame on Labor for voting to pass it and haggling over people's lives in the process. And triple shame on them for now trying to claim any kind of victory after putting the community through the trauma once again of being used as some political football. Throwing trans kids under the bus because it's election time and you reckon your seats are safer if you try and placate the hard right Christian factions in Parliament rather than fight for equality.
You know, I think what happened on Thursday with Labor's genius strategising wasn't a victory, it was a missed bullet, a near fucking miss. But what does winning actually look like? You win by fighting for your rights. The spark that set off the gay liberation movement in 1969 was a riot at the Stonewall Inn in New York. It was a riot! When lesbians, gay people, trans people and more stood up and fought back against the cops who were raiding and arresting them and beating them down regularly, and they had enough. All the rights that we have as LGBTI people now is because of fighting. And that includes marriage equality. The fight for marriage equality was not just a single plebiscite, it wasn't just a single vote in Parliament, it was a protest movement that took 13 years! And it was also, again, a fight against the Labor Party, who were in office in 2008 when it became majority public opinion that gay people should be able to get married. 2008! So yeah, what happened on Thursday was not some victory for queer rights, because the bill isn't dead. The bill isn't dead because Labor didn't kill it. And it will come back into the Senate eventually, and there's no reason to think that it's not going to pass then. But when it comes back, we need to be ready to fight it. We need to be ready to fight it on the streets like we're doing right now. So when queer rights are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When queer rights are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
Say, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
Say, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
Thanks.
You are listening to RTR FM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show with me, Joni. We've also got Ray, Kelly and Brahma keeping up the good vibes down there on the floor. And you just heard voices from last Saturday's, or this just gone Saturday's, religious discrimination bill rally.
And you're on the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1 with myself, Raymond Grenfell, also Joni Boyd, Kelly Warden and Brahma Wolfenstein is here with you as well. Did you know that? That's his full name is Lucky Brahma Bobtail Wolfenstein. But we'll just,
what part of the world is that from?
Hamilton Hill. Anyway, a bit of time now for a bit of Indie Media news. A new report by the Norwegian Refugee Council found civilian casualties in Yemen have nearly doubled since the UN Human Rights Council voted to disband an independent monitoring group in October. In the 4 months since then, at least 1,535 civilians have been killed in Yemen's civil war. Human rights groups say all parties in the conflict have committed serious violations, including Houthi artillery attacks on civilian areas and Saudi-led coalition airstrikes on hospitals, weddings and funerals. And in the United States, a newly declassified letter written by two senators reveals the CIA has been secretly and illegally carrying out a mass surveillance program on U.S. citizens and residents for years. Senators Ron Wyden and Martin Heinrich called in their letter from April 2021 for more details about the CIA program to be released and said it was, and I quote, entirely outside the statutory framework that Congress and the public believe govern this collection, and without any of the judicial, congressional, or even executive branch oversight that comes from a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act collection.
Alrighty, and in Haiti, multiple people have been injured in a demonstration for higher minimum wage. Haitian police fired tear gas on the striking factory workers last Thursday in an attempt to break up the protests. The workers were demanding a pay increase to at least $15 a day as the country grapples with rising inflation and ongoing political and security crises. The Haitian Times has reported that three women were among those hospitalised in the two days of protests after sustaining injuries from the tear gas. A pregnant woman was also hospitalised because of breathing difficulties, while two men were reported to have been beaten by the police. And Herber Lopez became the fifth journalist to be killed in Mexico in 2022. Herber Lopez was the director of the online news site Noticias Web. He was shot and killed at his office in the southern state of Oaxaca on Thursday. Police say they've arrested two suspects in the murder. The Biden administration has approved $5 billion of new weapons sales to Jordan, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. The deals include missile defense systems and advanced fighter jets. The State Department also approved the sale of nearly $14 billion worth of US-made weapons to Indonesia. In Australia, the New South Wales Premier has announced a new electric bus fleet to be built in Sydney. Dozens of new electric buses that produce zero carbon emissions will soon be manufactured in a Sydney plant as the state moves towards electrifying its entire fleet of buses by 2030. The new 79 environmentally friendly buses will cost the New South Wales government $70 million in a move that the Premier says will boost jobs in Western Sydney. Former NRL star Jared Hayne has won an appeal against his sexual assault convictions. In March last year, the 33-year-old was found guilty of two counts of sexual intercourse without consent after he met with a woman on NRL Grand Final night in September 2018. In May, he was jailed for a maximum of 5 years and 9 months. A three-judge panel in the New South Wales Court of Criminal Appeal has upheld some of his grounds for appeal and quashed his convictions. Mr. Hayne will face a retrial. And thousands of New South Wales nurses and midwives are preparing to walk off the job tomorrow for their first strike in almost a decade. Some of the state's busiest hospitals will be included in the 150 health sites participating in the strike as they demand better staff to patient ratios and a pay rise. And in WA, homes and buildings have been destroyed as bushfires tore through the southwest over the weekend. The bushfires were triggered by lightning strikes and severe weather that hit the Great Southern region on Friday. By Saturday, over 800,000 lightning strikes had been recorded throughout the state overnight. And that's news.
And this is the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1.